And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, welcome back. And listen, the text lines are open. You want to text it in or call it in. It's the same number either way. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Some of y'all have already got hold of it, so we'll check on a few of those here in a moment. And bottom of the hour, don't forget, we'll be sitting here in studio with Alabama Speaker of the State House, Nathaniel Ledbetter, who just walked in. So we'll get him mic'd up here in a moment and have him on the air for some on-air discussion about Alabama's workforce labor participation rate and what we can do about it. In the meantime, let's see what we got over here. Jeff from Holly Pond saying, how about this, to stop paying people not to work? There's that. Very succinct, to the point. Thank you, Jeff. JT from Lacey Springs says, when I heard last week about that nursing home fiasco, I went from zero to PO'd immediately. What an atrocity. And then he said, Butters and Lee, that's a good name for a snack, pastry, or ice cream. So, you just became a snack dish.
I'm a school and a snack.
You are an educational institution and like a snack.
Can you get a trademark filed on that for me tomorrow?
We may have to have t-shirts made or something. Okay. Brian from Huntsville says, Grr, Mr. Tamaro is probably still paying taxes off his retirement checks. Thanks for an excuse to go to the range now and blow off some steam. I'm digging it. John from Huntsville says, Phil, awesome monologue, very inspiring. Also just want to let you know, Butters, that today the majority of his grade is going to go depend on how well he does on the Butters and Lee segment. So just saying.
Pressure.
So you won. You won the last 2 days, didn't you?
I think you.
All I know is John apparently favors you right now. You are like the new class curve breaker. You're the teacher's pet. Did you bring him an apple? I don't know what happened here, but suddenly you've stepped in the door and, like, consumed the grading. And today, bro, today, right. No pressure, but you got to bring it.
All right. Well, okay. We'll see. Okay. We'll see.
Good enough. Hey, listen, so we're gonna dive into this conversation about labor force participation. So just to refresh you on this, Alabama has one of the lowest unemployment rates in the nation, which is huge, which is great. You look at that and go, nice. And if you got bragging rights, take them, right? I don't mind Governor Ivey taking a victory lap on anything that makes a state look good, and it's during her administration, so why not? The problem is, it's not accompanied by the other metric which you want to see go well, and that's our labor force participation. So unemployment rate and labor force participation are two separate things. The labor force participation is literally calculated based upon the number of people ages 16 and over who are still actively engaged in the labor force or looking for a job themselves, who are not otherwise employed, you know, through the military or in an institution like prison. They don't take prison labor into account. So all said and done, what it basically means is here's the number of people engaging the labor force. We have low unemployment, but it also means we just don't have enough people out there looking for jobs. We have somewhere in the neighborhood, according to some articles we've got here, somewhere in the neighborhood of like 140,000 job openings across the state of Alabama. So first of all, if you're out there looking for a job, you got no excuse, because we have jobs in this state. If you're physically able, if you can pass the basic recruiting test that they may have, you may very well find employment if you want it. And Alabama wants you to go to work. How about that? Generally speaking, we want you to go to work. We are a productive state. We have never been a slouch state. We have never been the kind that sits on our laurels. You know, we have a state motto like We Dare Defend Our Rights. It tends to speak of an active and engaged and forward-leaning posture. But right now, we got one of the worst labor force participation rates in the state. And I'm glad to hear that our Speaker of the House is addressing it. We'll come right back. Speaker of the House, Nathaniel Ledbetter, in the House. And we'll talk to him right here. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. All you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That's this one. That's Alabama. And I'm talking about, man, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. Well, I'll tell you somebody else who covers some ground, and that is Nathaniel Ledbetter, who's sitting in studio right now, Speaker of the Alabama State House. Prior to that, a member of the body of the House of Representatives. Prior to that, you were, what, Mayor of Rainesville?
That's correct. Yes.
Welcome back to Right Side Radio.
Hey, it's good to be here. Always good to see you.
Well, I appreciate you making time. I know you're catching me on the way to somewhere else, which is what that part-time job does,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it does. That's right. That's what we were talking about last week. I think I left home at 6:30 and got home at 10 o'clock, and I told Joe and the guys with me, I said, we've spent all 18 hours today on this part-time job.
So that's unreal.
It happens sometimes, though.
Yeah, for those of y'all that don't know, so I was a rank-and-file member of the state Senate. I was not the pro tem, nor was I ever Speaker of the House. And Charlene and I still called it my full-time, part-time job.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Some days you look at it and go, I don't know why I even have another job, because it wouldn't make a difference. Yeah. Hey, I got to ask you a question.
Sure.
Serious business.
Absolutely.
Is there anybody making the motion to vacate the chair that we should know about in the State House?
Yeah, I think our rules are a little different. I was kind of, you know, when they redid the rules this time and gave the opportunity to vacate the House on a motion, I thought, well, that's a little slippery slope. And we don't have that rule in Alabama, thank goodness. But, it's kind of frustrating to see. I felt like that we were making progress as a Republican party, and to see that infighting, all we do is hurt ourselves. I think it was Reagan that said, you know, don't speak badly of another Republican. Evidently, they hadn't forgot that and never knew it won.
Yeah, I told somebody yesterday, and I don't mean to chase a rabbit too much, but I told somebody yesterday, I said, you know, on the one hand, I'll say this. Where else in the world are you allowed to see a formal roll call vote with an orderly transition because leadership needed to change in the eyes of one person, and they secured the votes and got it done? Mm-hmm. So I guess on the one hand, you got to see democracy in action. But on the other, my thought was, this timing sucked.
Mm-hmm. Well, the timing was terrible. And the other thing is, you know, it seemed like Gates had I think it was more of a personal issue. I think more and more that comes out, that's being seen. But, you know, Gates had talked about one of the reasons he wanted to do it was because he had cut a deal with the Democrats. Well, let's be honest about it. If Gates hadn't cut the deal with the Democrats, they couldn't have voted him out. So he is talking out of both sides of his mouth. And, the one thing I can say, you and I worked together for a period of time, and I think you know me and I know you, and I know if you told me something, I could believe you, and that's the way it was going to be. And I feel like you thought the same to me, because we had part of the same district at one time.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you see people doing that, it really concerns me about the people we're electing. And a part of that, as you know, is because people are not voting. I mean, we can't complain about what's going on if we don't get out and vote. And in some of those districts, and the Speaker of the House in Tennessee is a friend of mine, and I've seen some of the issues he's had to deal with. You know, some of those guys, two of those guys that he had expunged had gotten elected by less than 1,400 votes. I mean, so how do you?
Well, we got members of the state house right now in Alabama that almost had to have a challenge to even see whether they're going to be in office. Yeah. I mean, I had a lady I'd mentioned the history on the we are chasing a rabbit, aren't we?
Yeah,
but
well.
I had a lady that I represented as an attorney.
Yeah,
she ran for a city council race here in the area, and lost by one vote. And we recognized that there were at least 9 provisional ballots we could challenge because those people didn't live in the district or the properties were divided or whatever. We challenged it, and we won the case.
Yeah.
But when they opened the ballots, they still counted out to where she lost by one.
Oh, really?
So I told the judge, heck of a thing to win the case and still lose the race. But nonetheless, stuff happens. But you know what? It's still democracy. And you look at it and go, all right, Matt Gaetz got elected by his folks, and they knew who they were electing. Mm-hmm. And then Kevin McCarthy, he's going to decide what his future is going to be, I guess. But right now, I just hope they get it together pretty soon and put somebody in place who's going to be able to herd the cats.
Well, I do too, because it's so important for us as Republicans to see the change. And, you know, the Bidenomics is ruining our economy. And, you know, that to me, it helps when we work together and move forward to make significant changes.
Okay, so let's talk about the economy. So Alabama, we have a distinctively good unemployment rate, which is 2.2%. You love to see that kind of number, except that you accompany it, though, with a labor force participation rate that's one of the worst in the nation. And I've got the numbers here, but we literally, we are second. I mean, the only state worse than us is West Virginia. Right. And then we're tied with Kentucky, New Mexico, and South Carolina. And what it basically means is there's a lot more jobs right now than there are people looking for them. And you formed a committee here recently to begin addressing the issue.
We did. They met today. And I know that they're trying to put some things together. I'd like to see some legislation come out so we can address it fairly quickly. You know, one of the things I think that we'll see is child care is going to be a part of it. You know, I think we talked yesterday. I was in the office in Montgomery yesterday, talked some about we really need to find a mechanism to poll these people and ask them, you know, why. I think after you poll a certain number, you're going to find the same reasons. Some of it, you know, we figure probably in the state there's about 12% that's disabled that probably needs, you know, can't work. So that's probably part of that. But then, you know, the other numbers are folks that needs to be out and getting a job. And sometimes, I don't know, I do think that there are some that's taking advantage of the system. I don't think there's any question about that. I think we need to find that out and make sure that we shore those up. The other thing is, I think single moms and families that maybe doesn't have enough income for child care could be part of it. I talked with manufacturing folks yesterday, and one of the things we talked about was the possibility of small businesses creating child care within the business and giving them a tax credit for that. So I think there are ways for us to improve it. North Carolina has done a pretty good job. Yeah, I talked with the Speaker of South Carolina. It's kind of neat. I mean, we have a chance to go to the speakers' conferences and talk about the issues and what's going on. And I actually brought this conversation up just riding back from an event on a bus, and it's like everybody was talking about it around me then. You know, the Speaker of Missouri, the Speaker of South Carolina, and we got to talking about what we could do to fix it. And so what I thought I'd do when I come back is we put a committee together. Chairman Reed Ingram will be chairing the committee. It's an ad hoc committee of just House members at this time because we're not in session, so it has to be an ad hoc committee, as you know.
Right.
So we'll see what they come up with. I think they'll come up with three or four, maybe five different bills that we can make a difference and maybe help with some of that.
And that's what I was going to ask you. So, you may have just answered my question. I was going to say I would hope that what we're looking at here is the brewing of a legislative package to try and tackle the issue, and probably a series of bills. You can pick a piece here, pick a piece there. In case you lose one, you don't lose all.
That's right, 100%. I mean, that's what we try to do. I'd like to have four or five in a package to make sure that we not only – I mean, we don't need – if somebody's been successful in another state, and that's one thing that I charge them to do is see what they've done. Yeah. Why are they successful? Let's find out how they did it right. And, you know, the thing is, this is different, as you know, than workforce development. I mean, workforce development is when – and Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth has got a committee doing that, and they're doing a great job. And I think two-year college systems are helping them with that. But that's trying to create a workforce for the future.
Right.
What we're trying to do is get people –
Back in the workforce,
and it seems like after the pandemic, our numbers even got worse. I mean, I had a chance to talk to the road builders last week, and I just asked them. I said, "So, if you had more employees, how many of you could do more contracts?" Well, about half the room raised their hand. So, can you imagine if you think about that? And that was just one industry. So, if you think about it across the state, how much that would improve our economy and grow our economy if we could get those people back in the workforce?
So, basically, we could get 411 to Cherokee County finally finished.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. So, that being said, there are certain demographics, and you can see all my highlights here, but there are certain demographics that for some reason seem to be out of the picture more lately. One of which you mentioned a minute ago was young singles, single mothers, and that's got to be dealt with. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the others we saw was there was during COVID, we wound up seeing a higher attrition rate, natural attrition rate on people dropping their retirement papers because they're like, you know what, if it's going to be like this, I'm just dropping my papers and I'm done. And we haven't replaced those like we would have hoped to because more of them came through at one time than expected. That being said, I wonder if there's a way out there to give, like you see it, we have state retirees. But once they're a state retiree, they often can't have an income that goes past a certain level.
That's right.
And so is there a way to then incentivize them back into the workforce and allow them to have their full retirement? I'm looking at all kinds of things. How do we get the retirees back in the workforce who bring that kind of gray beard experience? At the same time, the other demographic that apparently is suffering is millennials.
Right.
Entirely different demographic. But what do we do to attract them in? I mean,
yeah, I think there's a lot of different things we can do, and I know the committee is going to be studying those. But that, you know, one thing, I think you're 100% right. And we passed a bill this year that allows people that's in police officers to come back and do SRO work. And we did it for state troopers. We
exactly.
did it for county. And I think you're right. You know, one of the things we need to expand that. You know, we talk about our shortages in teachers. But in our area, you know, being from northeast Alabama, we see a lot of teachers that retire here and go to Georgia and get a second retirement or get another paycheck. So
right.
why don't we do that in Alabama? I mean, we got to have them anyway, and most of them already got their benefits because they've retired, and they get those after they retire. So why don't we increase the amount, bring them back in the state? And I think that would be positive for us. And we had that discussion last year, but I do think that is a method as to where we can get people back in the workforce, too.
And we've done some things in recent years, and we were doing some when I was there addressing some of this with our military community. Because Alabama's got a great military community with, I got to keep all the right names in place now. So Anniston Army Depot is still the depot, but Pelham Range changed its name this week.
Yeah.
It's now something else, Clark Range, I think. And then Fort Rucker is now Fort Novosel, and thank goodness Redstone is still Redstone.
Yeah.
But all that to say, our military and Maxwell Air Force Base, our military community is a big deal to our state. And then when you have spouses come in who are licensed in one state, we have been giving reciprocity on a lot of those skill sets here without having to make them retest. But maybe there's a way that we can look at drawing people from other states, not just military spouses, but saying, if you come here with some level of credentialing, we're not going to make you have to pay to go through all the testing and the processes if you can just show that you've got a license that we recognize.
Well, and I think that's a good idea. I mean, it's worked with the military folks, as you know. And
I was
at Maxville, this Air Force Base, this week. First time I'd had a chance to really tour the base.
It's a great place.
Super impressed.
It's a great place.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't think the people of Alabama really know what they do.
I used to stay out there when I was in the legislature.
Oh,
that was my
goodness.
Favorite.
I mean, it's amazing. I was so impressed. And that, you know, most of, as you know, you've been there, but just about every military officer that gets the rank of an officer goes through Maxville. That is a schoolhouse. So very impressed. And we did do the reciprocity, and then we come back after that, and we did the licensure. So we did both for the military people, and I think we can probably look in doing that in some other areas, like you say, and I think that's a positive.
Well, let's keep this conversation going here. We got to take a break right now. We're with Speaker of the Alabama State House, Nathaniel Ledbetter, talking about what's it going to take to get Alabamians, or for that matter, other folks who want to be Alabamians, into our workforce, because we got jobs, y'all. We got lots of jobs. At the same time, we don't have lots of people for the jobs. Got to change that. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Yeah, making common sense like a superpower. All right. Hey, listen, we're back with Speaker of the Alabama State House, Nathaniel Ledbetter. Mr. Speaker, thank you for being here today.
Oh, it's good to be here.
And you tell me your job is safe. No one's trying to vacate the chair.
Yeah, nobody. That's right.
And nobody's nominating you to take anybody's place up in D.C.
No, right. I don't know that that role would be a little tough right now. I think
that job eats people right now.
Yeah. We got a little bit more of a majority than they did. Yeah. I think that helps.
So let me ask you a question. Story came out just today on the National Pulse. I got it right here in my hot little hands. But the National Pulse reports that the jobs report just came out. U.S. Labor reports a very lackluster overall I mean, they had hoped to add 150,000 jobs nationwide, the Biden administration did, and they got crushed with only 89,000 are reported, which means that what you and I are talking about right now is that there are fewer people in the workforce, in the labor force, than what would have even been expected. Even if you're a hopeful Democrat out there trying to pretend the numbers are better than they are, they come back and you're like, well, that's soul-crushing. Alabama, all right, we rank, I think our labor force participation, I got it right here, 57%. And for people to hear this, you want that number to be high. You want your unemployment number to be low.
That's right.
And unfortunately, we're low in both places.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And when we got to looking at it and seeing where we're at, and everywhere I go, you know, across the state, and I travel from one end of the state to the other, the main question was, I can't employ people. I can't get people to come to work. Or if they come to work, I can't keep them. And when we got to doing the research and seeing what was going on, it's not the fact that we don't have people out there. We do. As you said, 57% of the people in Alabama are working. So 43% are working age. I mean, it doesn't mean they're retirement age. These are people that's working age that does not have a job. And I think there's ways we can change that. I think we talked about the child care. You know, we passed a bill this year, Andy Witt did, with letting high school seniors learn how to balance checks and just learn simple soft skills. You know, one thing I think we've got to add to that is we've got to teach them how to fill out applications.
Oh, isn't that something?
I mean, but we don't think about that. We don't think about those things.
It's a life skill thing.
But it's a life skill, and it's something that we need to start doing in our 11th and 12th grade classes, is taking part of it out and do the financial literacy that we started last year and add the soft skill of simply filling out applications.
So I tell you, one of the cool – I got to be a part of several cool things, obviously, when I was serving in the legislature in the one of them was the dual enrollment bill. Mm-hmm. That was my bill in the Senate that allows high school kids to also dually enroll in a technical program at the junior college and come out of high school with a certificate in their hand and then go right in the job force.
That's right.
And so there's things like that that people don't realize are out there. Maybe a PR campaign alone would help. But then the other one is one day I was talking to Dr. Googe, who used to be the president of Auburn. He was in my office down in Montgomery, and we were just talking about stuff, budgets and whatever else. And out of the blue, I said, can I ask you a question totally off the wall? He said, sure. I said, have you ever seen Cherokee County's Gadsden State campus? And he said, I've not. And I said, well, it's the most beautiful and underutilized campus maybe in the state at the time.
Right.
And I said, and my, like your area right now where you live in Northeast Alabama, it's very agricultural, very rural. And I said, would you ever consider putting the first 2 years of an ag degree at the Gadsden State campus in Cherokee, let kids get a degree program started, and they might just go the whole 4 years.
Right.
And I thought he would kind of pat me on the head almost and say, well, thank you for your time, Senator. But he said, I'd be very interested in that. Dang if they don't have a poultry science program now at Gadsden State where you could start the first 2 years. And my point is, maybe the two-year college system can jump in on this. Maybe the 4 years and 2 years can collaborate. But there's got to be some out-of-the-box opportunities to show people job possibilities they didn't know existed.
No, I agree 100%. All of us get in our own bubble, and I've seen the very same thing at my college at Northeast. You know, I asked our president, I said, have you ever thought about collaborating with Athens State? I mean, we got a shortage of teachers. Can we not work with them and try to figure out how to get a four-year degree here through Athens? And surely over the last few months, they've coordinated, and now they're working together to try to create that. So I think sometimes we just get in the bubble and we don't think outside the box. But to fix a problem like this, we're going to have to think outside the box.
Well, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing right now with starting this ad hoc committee. More to go. We're going to take a break right now. We're going to come back. I want to kind of wrap this discussion, and then I got to ask you about redistricting just for a minute before you leave. I mean, you're here. Why not, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. We're with Speaker of the Alabama State House, Nathaniel Ledbetter. Going to get some unvarnished thoughts on what he thinks about jobs, labor force, but then also, daggum, what is going on with the map that just came out in the last couple hours for our new congressional districts. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative, just plain right. Well, welcome back to hour number two. We're sitting here in studio finishing up a conversation with the Speaker of the Alabama House, Nathaniel Ledbetter. Been in a variety of leadership positions around. I mean, he was mayor of Rainsville for a period of time, served as a rank-and-file member of the State House for a period of time, and then elected by his peers to serve as Speaker of the State House. Hey, Mr. Speaker, so listen, there was an article that came out on Yellowhammer News a couple of days ago. This is what piqued my interest and wanted to get you on the show.
Right.
It's about that committee you formed. We talked about it a moment ago, but you had this quote in the article. You said, Alabama is witnessing record-breaking economic growth and historically low unemployment rates. Two good things.
That's right.
Despite these numbers, though, in Alabama, there are roughly 140,000 job openings and only 48,000 unemployed workers across our state, meaning 48,000 people still out there avidly looking for a job.
Right.
So where do we go from here? You guys are bringing a package. You got other thoughts. If you had to pick a wish list, what do you see happening coming?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, they'll do the due diligence on it and come back to us and report and give us an idea of what to look at. I think certainly the child care is something we got to look at.
Will this be a priority, you think, a package priority?
It will be. Yeah. It will be for the Speaker. How's that?
Well, you formed a committee. You might as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we'll do that. And I know there's a lot of different good ideas. Some of them we've talked about today, even as simple as bringing retirees back to the workforce would help with jobs. And I do think there is some of the soft skills that we've got to teach in schools that there is lacking. I mean, you know, me and my wife was at a restaurant back home not long ago. A lady gets a $100 bill. She has to carry it to the manager.
Yeah.
Yeah, to give yeah. change back. So, yeah. And I don't know that that's her fault. But what's happening is we've got so involved in all the other issues going around how to teach kids and do it as a science. And sometimes we forget the simple things. And I think, you know, filling out an application, knowing how to do timesheets, things like that's important that we do not look at or study in school. And I think it's important that we look at that as well.
No, I think you're absolutely right, because the next generation, I mean, I can remember my first true clock in, clock out. I mean, I've been doing something since I was 14, like, you know, mowing grass or whatever. But my first time to ever have a paycheck that came from a time clock was working at Chick-fil-A in Parkway City Mall in Huntsville, Alabama. And but we had old school cash registers.
Right.
And you had to go chicka 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 chicka, but you had to count the change out. And people don't realize what a perishable skill. I mean, nowadays you and I probably are just as guilty as anybody on our cell phones. We don't memorize phone numbers more. We just go to their person's name.
Yeah, I don't know anybody's phone number
anymore. Yeah, everything's changed.
It's changed. It has changed. And, you know, I hate to see it, but it seems like we're going more and more to a cashless society. And I don't see that at all.
I don't either. You and I were talking during the break briefly about dual enrollment. You wanted to bring that back.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that. We will be going to Jacksonville State University after we leave here, talking to a group there. And that's one of the things I had looked back on dual enrollment in Alabama, and I know it's something you were passionate about.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how much it has changed our education system in the state. And I think we've only just begun. I mean, sometimes in government it takes a long time to turn a ship.
Yeah,
and I think that ship has started turning with dual enrollment. Alabama's one of the few states that enrollment is up. But this year alone, we had over 27,000 dual enrollment kids in
there
colleges.
You go.
So congratulations
there
you
go.
To you.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
That's great. And I think we've just started. I mean, and I think we've got to do a better job in framing it, because some principals are wanting to do it one way, some another. But I think we're doing a good job with it. Now, I do think we need to probably put more money into it.
Yeah.
Simply because it's working.
Yeah.
I mean, it is working. We got,
no kidding,
you know, 37% of our kids did some of their undergraduate work either by dual enrollment or by internet. Think about that.
That is crazy cool, actually.
It is. It really
is. And, you know, when you look at it, too, speaking of needing people in the workforce, I mean, if you're a kid in high school and you don't have intent to be a white-collar office worker, you know, that doesn't mean you're not a valued member of society, because we need people in the trades. You can go to junior college while you're finishing high school. here's an example. Get your welding certificate and go down to Austell Boatyards and make $60,000 a year on day one.
That's right.
I mean, there's things like that that people just don't realize is available to them.
And it is. I mean, Austell's done a really good job co-oping with their local schools, and they've got kids coming in half a days to co-op with them. And if they are qualified, then they offer them a job right out of high school. And like you said, some of them's hitting $60,000. And I know the trades are important. So
there was a public-private partnership. You just said something that sparked a memory, and I don't want to – I'll chase this rabbit because it's on topic. There was a public-private partnership between, and I'm trying to think which company it was, but it's a major corporation up in the Athens area, and they collaborated with a program with the local high school, and they had kids interning, but it was like an intern to work. So if you graduated high school and you had been one of their interns, you may very well be staying there for a job.
That's right.
And but that public-private partnership piece, and if we can engage the business community in doing things like that, I just see it being a win.
It is a win, and we got to remodel. I mean, we got the days of the 70s and 80s when the tech school was to just learn building science or plumbing and things. We got to change that.
Yeah.
We got to do it for what we need. I mean, if you think about it, so we were at Maxwell. We talked about that earlier, and they were needing IT people. They don't have them. They can't get them. And I'm thinking, you know, we need to be teaching that.
Yeah.
And so we've got some issues we got to get past. And that's being one of them. And it's hard to hire an IT teacher because the state's paying $50,000. Well, they're going to leave a $100,000+ job to come make 50. That's probably not going to happen unless they're retired. We're seeing the same thing in welding. We're seeing the same thing in machinists. So I think we got to have a different model and maybe be able to bring people in it and know the trades.
Yeah, and I remember, too, that poultry science program I told you about that they kindled up at Auburn and Gadsden State and Cherokee County. We went to a celebration of the first-year anniversary of the program, and the head of the Alabama Poultry Association was there, and I had no idea. Brother, I had no idea that poultry alone is a $1 billion enterprise just in Alabama.
That's right.
And he said that the average kid graduating from the poultry science program, the average kid has 5 jobs asking for him, regardless of his GPA.
How about that?
The average That's kid amazing. Has 5 jobs asking for him with an average starting salary between $65,000 and $80,000 on day one.
That's awesome.
And it's just amazing what's available if people want to get into it.
And that's why we got to think outside the box to generate – interest in things like that and try to get people interested. I mean, you know, Alabama ranks number 2 in the country in poultry.
Yeah.
In the industry alone. So it's no surprise.
You and I live around a lot
of
it.
We do. Yeah. Yeah. And it's great. It's been great for the community. And, you know, poultry and cattle are strong in Northeast Alabama.
All right. Well, listen, I can't let you be in my studio and not talk about something. We're going to change the subject here. We got about 4.5 minutes left here.
Okay.
And in that 4.5 minutes, by God, what in the world happened with the map? So we got handed the map today. For those of y'all that don't know, breaking news, you heard me talk about it off and on for the last number of weeks about how Alabama had to redraw the maps. We had to redraw them multiple times while I was there.
That's right.
Yeah. Y'all had to redraw them again this time.
Right.
Did a fair job of drawing them, same as they'd been for the most part since 1992.
That's right.
And then they went to court and were told we had to be more racial.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me in 92. So the Democrats were in charge then, and they agreed with the map we had. Isn't that interesting? So now,
wow.
I mean, this was all started, you know, by Eric Holder and Barack Obama. I mean, I'd heard about it when I first became majority leader at a conference I was at. You know, it's one of those things you hear about in time, you don't think much about it. Now they got over $300 million, and they're going into red states trying to pick off those seats.
Yep.
You know, so the seat could actually change without the people even voting as a whole, as a state. You know, I think the way that we looked at it when we did the redistricting, you know, the House had one version, the Senate had another one. My goal was to come together, try to split the baby and come and put something out. So I thought it was important that we put something out. The thing we tried to do, we tried to keep community of interest together.
Right.
One, we tried not to racially gerrymander. Two.
Yeah, like the 1965 Voting Rights Act says.
Yeah, like it really says. So, and then when we sent it in to see what they had to say and then to look at the map today, the only way that they could get the second district was to racially gerrymander. I mean, it's clear as day. And even you know, the gentleman, the master, was talking about his question himself about that very thing.
Yeah.
And it's in his report. But they still prove it. And I don't get it. I mean, I don't understand the philosophy behind it. The people of the state elect people to represent them, and they should be the ones that draws the maps. And if I'm not mistaken, and you can make sure I'm right on this, it was Barack Obama that made the statement that elections have results.
Oh, yeah, they have consequences.
They had consequences.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't seem to be the case anymore since he's on the other side and raising money to change some of these red states. I mean, if you look at it right now, you got Alabama, you got South Carolina, you got Louisiana, and I think Florida's coming into play now. So if they pick off some of those seats and turn them to Democrats by changing the maps, then they're going to control.
There are ongoing lawsuits right now, including Texas. There's ongoing lawsuits around the nation right now that are on pins and needles because of what just happened to Alabama. So the map came out today, and we got about a minute and a half. But the map came out today, and they chose map number 3, which, I mean, if you look down to South Alabama, they literally split Mobile County. I mean, and so Congressman Carl is probably going, oh, crap, right about now, because that's a big chunk of his base is Mobile County. And then they drew he and Barry Moore, who was on the show yesterday, they drew them into the same district. So if they're both running, there's two incumbent Republicans have to run against each other.
Yeah, that wasn't right. I mean, that's one thing we tried to avoid at all costs. We didn't want to put
That's called respect.
It is called respect. And we had it for the Democrat. We did it for Terry Sewell. And then when they come back and they put them together, and then racially gerrymandered and then went back beyond what we were talking about by splitting those communities of interest, there's no way what we had wasn't a better map, in my opinion. Now, I know some people's going to disagree, and that's fine. That's how we have the conversation. But I think we were fair with what we did.
Well, and I know it's a matter of ongoing litigation, so I won't ask you to delve too much deeper into your opinions, but I know the Attorney General is still on it. And then we'll see if SCOTUS wants to take this thing up. But if the Supreme Court of the United States chooses not to take it up, I think we're going to see this play out in other states all around the nation.
Well, I do too, and I talked with our attorney, and one thing he told me that, you know, Alabama's issue they may not take up, but Louisiana's they might.
Okay.
So if that happens, it could change the dynamics of how it's supposed to be drawn, and that could be beneficial to us because, as you know, that's a bill. I mean, in reality, if we wanted to go back next year and redo it, we could. They'd put us right back through the same thing that they did, but it's still, I mean, as a legislative body, we could change it.
I mean, you're so used to drawing maps, you do it in your sleep now, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, some of the guys are. Of course, Chairman Pringle has done a great job, and I hate to see, you know, Senator Livingston, they've worked countless hours, and I think they've put a lot into it, and to me, it's kind of a backslap.
Well, Mr. Speaker, appreciate you being here today. More to come on the labor force participation and getting the folks in Alabama back to work or getting folks into Alabama to come work. But all said and done, keep us posted on what y'all decide, how the committee reports out. And once you get a package together, we want to talk about it more, all right?
I'd love to do that. Once we get a package together, I'll send it to you, and then we'll try to get back on.
All right. All right, that's Speaker of the House, Nathaniel Ledbetter. That's your Alabama Speaker of the House. Yes, his job is safe. You don't have to worry about his. But anyway, we appreciate you being here today.
Thank you.
All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll come back, take a few text messages and see what's up. And then bottom of the hour, got a little time with Butters and Lee. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Yeah, making it cool to be a conservative. Coming up here in a few minutes, just a few minutes, because we ran a little bit long with Speaker Ledbetter. We're gonna have the next iteration of Boomer McQueen calling it Butters and Lee. And by the way, this ain't the B team, not by any stretch. This is like, wow, we got depth. How do you have that much depth in your lineup? But Butters, you're like, we call you depth now. It's going to be deep in something. I know that.
We'll see.
Got a few text messages here to catch up on. Laura from ARAB says, way too many people on disability from a backache to a toe ache. The doctors need stricter regulations. Yeah, you're talking about federal law there too, though, Laura. We can't. I don't disagree. There's a lot of folks that have opportunities to lay out that take it, and they didn't need to. But Social Security is going to be a federal issue, and so that's not something that the speaker can even address. Brian from Huntsville says, poultry science degree. I am willing. I am not chicken. See what he did there? He's not chicken. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, though. I was shocked at the industry. I mean, I've never been an ag guy myself. But I have a huge amount of respect for those who are. In fact, there have been a number of times and I kind of wished I was. But the reality is the industry is huge to Alabama. In fact, I thought because, you know, when you drive around, a lot of times what you're seeing is row cropping or cattle. You don't always see the poultry houses or know what's happening in the poultry industry. But dang, it is absolutely huge in Alabama. If you want to get a 2-year start on a 4-year poultry science degree with a guaranteed good income and pretty much jobs waiting on you when you graduate, think about it. Eric from Eva, Alabama, says, Speaker Ledbetter wants us to pay someone for someone else's daycare? No, that's not what he said. Eric, you misunderstood. He said maybe we could supply a tax credit. In other words, incentivizing employers to establish daycare to help draw in new workers. And if they do that, we give them a tax credit. Give them some tax relief is what we're saying. We'll take less of your money, Mr. Employer, if you'll help something with your employees to have daycare. He did not say we're going to subsidize it. Two different things. There's a big difference between the Biden version of taking care of business and the Republican version is usually a tax credit versus a handout. Jerry from Decatur says, it was good to hear a Ledbetter is great at something besides basketball, as in DAR High School. Enjoyed your visit with the speaker. Thank you, Jerry. Appreciate that. Jeff from Holly Pond, we appreciate you keeping us in track. Apparently, we had a gaffe on one of our stations, but he says we're good to go, Butters. So no need to contact the station. We're good there. John from Huntsville says, what kind of degrees can you get at a Butters and Lee University? Well, there's all kinds. Yeah. Usually, when you think it through, you might find that it's, something deep and meaningful, I feel certain. Technical degrees.
Yes, yeah, for sure.
Or is it just temperature degrees?
Or does it take us further down the road of Idiocracy?
and there's no cacistocracy, no Idiocracy. No, we're not doing that. Coming up here in a minute, we're going to have some fun. I'm going to ping Butters and Lee with some questions. That's Lee from Huntsville. With some questions and just see what their thoughts are on some stuff. And then y'all text in because this is usually the Boomer and Lee segment, Boomer McQueen segment that winds up having so much interaction with the audience. And some of the questions today, you're going to want to weigh in. You're going to want to weigh in. I'm just going to tell you right now, I got questions. We'll see if they got answers and y'all are going to want to weigh in. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.